Welcome to Rise to the Top, a podcast from the Greater Houston Partnership that aims to amplify the voices of accomplished female leaders in the Houston region. In each episode, we feature compelling guests who share their personal journey and discuss how their organization is making an impact right here in Houston. I'm your host, Katie Pryor, Chief Development Officer and SVP of Member Engagement for the Greater Houston Partnership. In this episode of Rise to the Top, we're speaking with Elizabeth Killinger, President of Reliant and Executive Vice President of NRG. Elizabeth has been with NRG for more than 20 years and is responsible for directing all aspects of NRG Home, which provides innovative residential power and gas services to millions of customers in the United States and Canada. In her role, Elizabeth challenges the energy industry to introduce new products that provide customers with insights, choices, and convenient ways to power their lives. The native Houstonian is also passionate about charting pathways for future generations. We're going to speak with Elizabeth about her career journey, her commitment to innovation in the energy industry, and prioritizing family life, all while serving our community. We're so excited to have her with us today. Elizabeth, thank you for joining us.
It's great to be here, Katie. Thank you for having me.
Okay, we are going to start by letting our audience get to know you a little bit. So tell us about you.
Okay, so I am a sixth generation Texan, born and raised and educated in Houston. I have a husband. He's not quite native, but close to it. He got here when he was just months old. We have three children, and I originally thought that I wanted to be an engineer, and because my father was an engineer. And so my mom was a homemaker, and I went to school, started studying engineering, and realized that probably wasn't the best path for me. Physics taught me that. Physics was fine in high school, but when I got to college, it was a whole new story. But anyway, I actually had a professor in college. It was my physics professor. And he's like, "What are you doing here?" I'm like, "What do you mean? What am I doing here? I'm going to school, you know, going to become an engineer." And when he asked me that, it prompted me to realize that I might actually, that might not be where my gifts and talents lie, and that it was okay to change. And so that was really the first time in my life where I took that major pivot. And so I transitioned to move to the business school and studied MIS in business school, and then actually spent the first decade of my career doing management consulting. So that was strategy consulting, software development, process reengineering, and all those things that, you know, you get thrown into the fire as a consultant. And so I spent my time doing that. On the personal side, I met and married my husband in the mid-90s, and we actually took the path to have three children and have really worked in partnership to raise those children, who now are almost grown, two in college and one in high school. So that's a little snippet of me.
Yeah, just a little snippet, but I think something that is both inspiring and relatable for a lot of people. So we're gonna unpack a lot of this, Elizabeth. So over the past 30 years of experience in the energy and services industries, including, as I mentioned, more than 20 years with NRG, which you joined at a really critical point in the industry's history, which we want to talk about. Tell us a little bit more about your overall career trajectory. You know, what sparked your interest in energy specifically?
So I mentioned I spent the first decade in consulting, and at the end of that season was a little over 2 years helping Reliant actually open the market to competition. And so I joke that that looked like, air quotes, the world's largest startup, in that we were preparing this business, but the business wasn't going to get to acquire one customer and then two customers in the same way most companies do. There were a handful and there were some trial periods, but on day one of market open, we had to bill 100,000 customers that night. And so there were a lot of things that we had to do there. As far as what sparked my interest, I would say that I didn't anticipate. It wasn't a plan to go get into electricity or the energy business, but there was this opportunity, and I had some skills from my time in consulting, doing software development and business improvement that helped me see that I could apply those skills to the energy industry. And once I got involved, it wasn't scary. It wasn't, you know, maybe what people think about before they're in the business, but it had challenging opportunities to learn and grow and make a difference. So that really, in the end, is what compelled me. It's a product. Energy is a product everybody needs, and so I wanted to be a part of making a difference for people.
Yeah, and I love the way you put it. As it was saying yes to an opportunity that you were presented with, and so maybe it's this one, maybe it's something else. But as you reflect back on just your entire career, was there a certain defining moment along the way? So where you took a risk or you did say yes to an opportunity that paved the way for something bigger?
Yes, absolutely. The first yes was the yes to actually join the company and become kind of an owner in the business as opposed to an advisor to it. But then about a decade later, I was tapped and asked the question that somebody said, hey, I have three opportunities. One is running operations. One is running a part of the business in this area. Another is running a business in another area. And I was like, oh, that operations role, that's me. That's perfect. I've spent a decade of my operations career at the company getting ready. I'm your guy, you know? And they said, no, this other opportunity leading this business area is the one I want you to focus on. I'm like, what? You know, that's not what I thought. I've been prepared to do something internally. So that opportunity actually led to me being asked to be president of the company and in the retail part of the company, and really moved me from Miss Inside, where it was all about operations, to the public face. And in fact, the Greater Houston Partnership was the first organization I joined in that new external role. And it really helped me learn all about the Houston community and other leaders, helped me get opportunities to meet other leaders. So I really consider it pivotal to my career.
Yeah. And you've been involved with the partnership for every year since that time that you said yes.
Exactly.
You mentioned a professor earlier when in the conversation that really seemed like they were pivotal to you choosing the right career path. And then when you say yes to this big opportunity, was there a certain mentor that comes along, or maybe multiple people who really helped you as you were taking on this new big risk and opportunity?
Yeah. So I would say there were a couple of different leaders who talked with me and really introduced me to the concept of succession planning and what it looked like to grow and develop and build skills. And so from there, I could think about how to apply a project experience and how that could make a difference for the future. And I always think about it, it's especially true in those really challenging times when you're like, why am I going through this? Why is this so hard? And what I learned through some of those early days is they're hard because they're preparing you for something in your future. And it's something you may actually see and connect the dots on. And other times you don't even recognize what that was preparing you for, but it made you stronger, built your muscles so that you could tackle some unexpected challenge that you don't think about down the years.
Well, that is a very good reminder for so many people that, you know, it's hard because it's preparing you for something, not because it's not working, but because it is. It's helping you develop new muscles. It's helping you prepare for something else. And, you know, that can be hard to see in the moment, but
exactly.
It's a good reminder to have. So let's talk a little bit about women in the energy industry. So careers have certainly evolved and become more accessible for women over the years, but the industry is still challenged with getting more women in STEM. And we hear about this all the time, from, you know, youth to college age to women in careers. And so, you know, right now women represent just over a quarter of all STEM jobs. What's your reflection on how that's changed over the years and how we can continue to get more young women thinking about careers in STEM?
Well, I think I would start by saying the education process from when children are small begins to form what they think about for what types of jobs and roles might be good for them. And, you know, some people need to see it to believe it. No two people are wired the same. You know, some people can see a blank canvas and say, oh, I can imagine this picture. Some folks need the drawing, but they've got the colors, right? They can put the colors together. And others, they need the, not only do they need the drawing, they need the numbers, they need the paints prepared. And then some people are like, I don't want to paint at all. I want to build it. I want to like use blocks. So I think it's important to recognize that those different skills and talents can be harnessed to make a difference. And so I think getting women exposed as little girls and with each, you know, middle school, high school, college, and then in the early days in their careers, to basically see that it's not scary, to remove anything that makes folks not want to pursue it. Because I really think it's what you don't know, that can sometimes close a door. And so we mentioned earlier being open to it. And I think the way we can help people be open to it is to help take away those things that cloud the perspective or take away the things that would create fear about it. Like, oh, I can't do that. I never studied electrical engineering in school. Well, I didn't actually study electrical engineering, and I actually lead an energy company. So that's the big thing to me, is to help them see it and see that there's a place for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And even demystify some of the things that people hear about. And have you seen this evolve over the years, Elizabeth? So over the past 30 years and 20 years of energy, have you seen some of how we talk about STEM and careers in STEM with young women evolve? Yes, and change?
Definitely. And inviting them in, we have whether it's, you know, women in energy activities with business resource groups where folks can hear and see and learn. And they may be in marketing, but they're in energy. Mm-hmm. They may be in accounting, but they're in energy. And I think that's the thing. A lot of times people think of the products and services that they use and it makes sense to them. But when they can see they can apply their skills in an industry, that, like you said, it demystifies it.
Yeah, I love that part. It's really about the skills that you have and can provide and apply to these different roles within the energy industry. You know, staying on this topic for a minute, recently at our Rise to Top event, we asked a question to the room: if anyone had experienced being the only woman in the room for their job, and asked everybody to raise their hand. And we have about 700 attendees who were there this year, most of whom are women, but we do have some men in the room, and nearly every single hand went up. And so, you know, it was a moment to reflect and say, you know, this, we still have a room full of women who've experienced being the only woman in the room for a conversation. And then we also have a recent McKinsey study that stated 20% of women still experience being the only woman in the room. And so as a female executive in an industry that's predominantly led by men, I'm sure you can relate. And, you know, how can we as leaders really use our positions and often our past experiences to help create more inclusive environments?
Yeah, I think the first is to share our stories. I was on a panel last week, and there were several women who said that they didn't ever think a job was beyond them because they saw other women or they heard of other women that played those roles. And I think we might underestimate the power of just being available and visible to share our stories and being a good role model through it, being somebody as a leader that others would want to follow and would want to work with, is the first kind of idea. The second is to make sure within our companies and importantly our spheres of influence, whether that's, you know, our kids' school or maybe the neighbor's kids' school or other places in the community and nonprofit organizations, to be available to share our stories. And then last, I would say to serve as a mentor, to really take the time. Sometimes there's a season in your life where you don't have time for that, and that's okay. But when you do have a season where you can take the time to just be available to talk to people, it could be one-hour event that you speak at that could change the trajectory for a woman's life. And so I think recognizing that every moment can make a difference, and then make the most of that.
Yeah. And you're hitting on something that is really important. And when we as women or any individual has, you know, a big career, a busy job, a home life that we prioritize, community that we prioritize, passionate about mentorship, that's a lot of different things to juggle throughout the day. And no day looks the same. You know, I think one thing you and I probably agree on is that balance is not a real thing. And so how can we prioritize different things in our life? And so you mentioned earlier, you know, you're a wife, a mother, you're active in the community, you're active with your church. You know, what's your personal philosophy on how you prioritize your life? And especially when there's so many different things you value, how do you figure out, you know, what gets front billing?
Well, what I would say is there's a truth that faith, family, and work can coexist. And it's about the mix. On one given day, the balance, like you said, it may not be there. But the mix can shift like blocks. They can shift around so that people can actually do all the things that need to get done. I think of that you've probably heard of the jar with the pecans and the rice. If you put the pecans in first, everything fits. And so I think making sure that that is a thought, I think spending time being still so that you can think for a moment to prioritize is especially important. And then being clear about what's okay and not okay. You know, your work, your family, your church or community, any one of those can take all that you have. So making sure that you're thoughtful about what is there enough of me for today, and not thinking like you have to solve it all for the month or the year. But what about today? And how can I make those three things, the faith, family, and work, fit today?
Yeah. And as you said, one day at a time, you know, and every day can look different. And that's also okay. And there's, you know, a lot of power in saying no, being able to say no to either, I don't have time for that, that, you know, that doesn't fall within what I can prioritize right now. But there is power in that no as well.
For sure.
So I'm sure along the way, prioritizing all of these different things has not been easy. And so, you know, what are some of the real struggles that you've experienced when trying to prioritize while growing your career?
Yeah. So I'll give one story I would tell is when I was actually, this was during the decade of consulting, and I was traveling, and I was actually based out of the Carolinas for that time. And I was in an airport coming home for Easter in the Charlotte airport. And I realized the plane was delayed and it was the last flight of the day. And I was like, if this plane doesn't go, I can't go home for Easter. And it was a pivotal moment because I decided, you know what? I'm not going to become a North Carolinian. I love the Carolinas, but home and my family were in Texas. And at that moment, I embarked on the, you know, it didn't happen overnight, but I embarked on the steps to get where I wanted to go. And so it's those trade-offs that you make. And sometimes you can make the trade-off and make the decision and can move quickly. Like, am I going to clean this room of the house, or am I going to go to my child's party at, you know, school or the birthday party? Am I going to be there and be a part of it? And making those trade-offs are quick ones. But I think recognizing sometimes you make a big one and they're like more of a strategic choice to live in Texas and have my life for decades out of Texas, or the small ones. But recognizing each of those choices has a consequence, and you want to think about what the difference is that choice is going to make for the long haul.
Yeah, I love that. You know, it doesn't have to be the immediate short-term impact, as you said, but if you can see the bigger picture, if you can start to work towards something. And Elizabeth, did you get home for Easter?
I did. The flight actually, while it was delayed, I did get home for Easter, but that weekend I did begin the process. Thankfully, I was able to transfer with the company I was with back to Texas, but it's not always that simple. Right. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it takes applying for lots of jobs to get there.
Yeah, it really does. Well, thank you for sharing that story. Let's touch base on an aspect of your life that you dedicate a lot of energy and time to, which is your community involvement. And you mentioned the Greater Houston Partnership. So you're a board member here. You are a board member and advocate on a number of different organizations. So how do you decide what to say yes to?
Well, the first is always am I passionate about the cause? Do I have a personal connection somehow to the cause? The second is, do my skills and experience make either me uniquely qualified or especially qualified to make a difference there? And then the last one, back to your earlier question, can it fit? Will it fit in my life? Is there any synergy that can exist around that? And most of my community service actually over the years, of course, we talked about the Greater Houston Partnership, but the other pattern is really education because my kids have been young. They're getting older now. But during that time, it was very relevant and that there was some efficiency in the service. So whether it's involvement in junior achievement or I'm involved in the Lutheran Education Association of Houston, the Bauer School Business Board, the Energy Advisory Board at the University of Houston. So lots of different ways, because really for me, education has such an important role in our businesses today, but importantly, our business and our community for the future.
Well, thank you for sharing that. I think if you can define, you said basically three things: am I uniquely or especially qualified, and does it fit? Those are things that anyone listening can help put some guardrails or some parameters around. What are they saying yes to? So thank you. Okay, so we are going to have some fun. I am especially excited about this lightning round with you, Elizabeth, because you are a native Houstonian, but sixth generation Texan. So I think that's going to be a lot of fun. So these are quick questions, quick answers. So just fire away. So what's your favorite restaurant?
Molina's Mexican Food.
Favorite place to unwind?
Bastrop, Texas.
Place you love to take out-of-town guests?
Space Center Houston.
Oh, good one. Favorite power lunch hotspot?
Adair.
What makes Houston a great place to live?
There is so much opportunity, and it provides a great place to raise a family. It's got a good climate. You can get out, we can swim on Christmas Day if we can get into a pool. We have tons of green space, and it's got all the restaurants, all the sports, all the arts. It's got it all.
We're going to bottle up that answer, and we're just going to use that for the Why Houston pitch. So what does Houston need more of?
I think people. Because I think people are what makes Houston great. And I think more people, whether it's visitors or people who choose to live here, I think each person makes a difference. And so I think Houston can be a magnet to talent and to whether it's leaders or individual contributors or new business entrepreneurs, I think people.
People love it. Okay. And when you think about Houston's overall trajectory of a city, what word comes to mind?
I would say transition. And the reason for that is because we are the energy transition capital of the world. We have medical innovation and a hub unlike others. And we're the most diverse city in the country. So if you think of all those things and plenty of other industry as well, we're constantly in transition to what's next, and we're a leader in what's next. So I think if we can continually stay in transition, we will be ahead of all the other major cities in the country and the world.
And we are going to leave it there because that's a really powerful point that you just made. Elizabeth, thank you for sharing your story, your time with us today. I am certain that your perspective and your story is going to help inspire somebody else, even make them feel less alone in the career that they're trying to navigate right now. So thank you for all of your time this morning.
Thank you so much, Katie. Great to see you.
And that's it for this episode of Rise to the Top. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast so you never miss an episode. You can do it on your favorite podcasting platform or by visiting the page houston.org. And on houston.org, you'll find links to recent news updates, updates on the economy, and learn how you can get more involved in the work of the partnership to make a difference in the greater Houston region. Thanks again for listening to Rise to the Top.